Good evening, listeners and viewers, and welcome to the Water Zone Radio Show, where tonight and every week we are live from the NBC News Radio Broadcasting Studios of KCAA, 1050 AM, Talk Radio 102.3 FM, and Express 106.5 FM. We're located right here in sunny and warm, at least this week, beautiful Southern California, and now we are simultaneously broadcast on Turfs Up Radio, and for the many new listeners we have, that's out of Fort Lauderdale, Florida, and it's courtesy of turfsupradio.com. Please visit the website. So thank you for tuning in, to the Water Zone this evening. I'm your host, Chris Davey. Now, I know you are always ready and listening to my favorite co-host, who's Rob Starr, but tonight Rob is in the very fine city of Santa Fe. He's attending an industry event called Next Gen Water Summit, where he's participating in a series of panels tackling a whole list of related issues. But wait, luckily though, we got the pleasure of still being able to listen and hear from Rob as he's just called into the radio show. So Rob, welcome from New Mexico. What the heck are you doing out there?
Well, right now I finished up our conference for today. It's a three-day conference here. I was on a panel with one of our previous radio guests, Dr. Jonathan Overpeck, who is a Nobel Prize winner, scientist. And we talked about climate change and the economic impact. We talked about WaterSense 2.0 and water rating systems between WERS and HERS, H2O, a whole plethora of different things that were going on down here, and a lot of good people. We had the head of San Francisco Power and Water. We had a bunch of PhD professors from Colorado State and the New Mexico. It's been great. A lot of people we know in the industry, people from the International Code Council, people from Southern Nevada Water, just a host of people on a host of different topics. So it's been an invigorating and nice to be around a bunch of smart people.
Well, that's a big list of heavy hitters right there, Rob, I'm telling you.
Yep.
Are you keeping your tie straight?
Keep my tie straight, yeah. Tie and jacket, too.
All right, well, I hope you're enjoying some good weather. It's much cooler down here this week than it was early in the week, so we're enjoying that.
Yep, and I guess we got a great show today.
Oh, it's absolutely perfect.
We've got some people coming. Actually, it's a pre-recording that you and I did with the city people from Cleveland and representatives from the Wyland Foundation, and that's something that we wanted to do a couple weeks ago. We got them on recording, and we'll be playing that shortly.
Yeah, that's right. Mayor Jackson from City of Cleveland and Steve Creech from the Wyland Foundation, and I guess tonight our usual Maven's Notebook water guest, Chris Austin, has the night off.
Yes, she does, and we miss her dearly. But she understood that the recording went a little longer than normal, and we wanted to make sure we got that covered on the show.
We do. So I hate to cut you off, but any passing closing remarks from you, Rob?
No, you're doing a great job, and see, you know how to run the show.
Hey, you don't know half the stuff we've been up to here since you've been gone. But all right, so we're going to get to a couple of commercials, folks. Stay with us, Rob. Have a great rest of the show out there. I'll see you when you get back next week.
And I'll talk to you after the conversation.
All right, you got it, Rob. Thanks.
All right.
Here we go to commercials. Bye-bye. Stay with us, folks.
Time to take a water break and talk some water. Irrigation. Such a refreshing topic. As more and more markets face water restrictions, your customers may be hungry, or should I say thirsty, for water-saving products. For new installations, add options like drip irrigation, controllers that respond to weather data, pressure-regulating heads, or heads with check valves. They all provide easy ways to differentiate your bids and win more jobs. Or for an extra stream of revenue, offer existing customers upgrades like high-efficiency nozzles, rotary nozzles, or Wi-Fi-based controllers. Because when you help your customers save water, you make a world of difference for the earth and your bottom line at the same time. We'll drink to that.
If you knew there was a pipe cement that works better than the one you're currently using, is better for you and the environment, and costs the same or less, would you buy it? Oh, no-brainer, right? Weldon, the trusted leader in solvent cements for over 60 years, is pleased to introduce a new line of solvent cements that does all that. Introducing the Eco Series line of solvent cements for PVC piping systems. Not only does it work great and set fast, it also has 30% lower solvent emissions and less smelly fumes, a better workplace environment when you're installing pipes. But don't just take our word for it. EcoSeries products are the only solvent cements that are Green Seal certified for environmental innovation for effective performance, improved working conditions, and for use with potable water. Now available in a medium-bodied fast-setting blue formula, 905 Eco, and a regular-bodied fast-setting clear formula, 900 Eco. Pick up a can today from your local distributor and see, smell, and feel the difference, just like Joe Sweat, president of Sunrise Irrigation, did. He said, after using Weldon's 905 Eco, we immediately noticed the application was smooth and there was noticeably less odor than other blue solvent cements on the market. The guys love it. To learn more about Eco solvent cements from Weldon, visit the website at www.weldon.com or call the technical service hotline at 877-477-8327. That's 877-477-8327.
Welcome back to the second half, and we have some special guests today on our show. I'm going to go down and introduce them, give a little bit of a background. First person is Mr. Steve Creech. He's the Vice President of Wyland Worldwide and the Executive Director of the Wyland Foundation. We also have the Mayor of the City of Cleveland, and a little background on him. On January 2nd, 2018, Mayor Frank G. Jackson took the oath of office for his historic fourth term, which will make him the City of Cleveland's longest-serving mayor. During his time in office, Mayor Jackson has been an advocate for building equity and opportunity for all Clevelanders in all neighborhoods. Mayor Jackson is a lifelong resident of the Central Neighborhood, where he began his career in elected office as its city councilman and later as city council president. He is a graduate of Cleveland Public Schools, Cuyahoga Community College, and Cleveland State University, the latter from which he earned his bachelor's, master's, and law degree. He began his public service career as an assistant city prosecutor in the Cleveland Municipal Court Clerk's Office. Next person we have is Mr. Matt Gray, and he serves as the Chief of Sustainability for the City of Cleveland. Working on all things urban sustainability, Matt has helped lead the Sustainable Cleveland 2019 initiative to create a thriving green city on a blue lake. He is responsible for advising the city on policies related to sustainability, managing the Office of Sustainability, and leading implementation of the Cleveland Climate Action Plan. And Mr. Jason Wood serves as the Chief of Public Affairs for the City of Cleveland's Department of Public Utilities. In his role, Jason oversees external affairs and provides policy advice for Cleveland Water, Water Pollution Control, and Cleveland Public Power. Additionally, Jason serves on the U.S. Water Alliance Water Equity Task Force and the One Water Council. So I'd like to welcome all of those guests to the show. And we're going to start off with Mr. Steve Creech from the Wyland Foundation. And Steve, I know for our listeners, kind of want to know more about the Wyland Foundation and what program you were running and why we wound up in Cleveland, and talk about that for a second before we bring on the mayor and his staff.
That's a great question, Robin. It's great to be here. As many of your listeners know, the Wyland Foundation is all about bringing people together for clean water and healthy oceans, and we do that through some truly incredible programs. Most of them are very mobile in nature. We have traveling science museums that are dedicated to water conservation and sustainability. We have national art challenges that kids from across the U.S. can get together and work collaboratively on these beautiful artworks, all dedicated to the way water inspires us and some of the issues that we're facing right now, where we have to look to the future and how we're going to work in a cooperative fashion to maintain those resources. But the one program that's really our signature program is our national campaign for water conservation. And we're going on our eighth year putting this together. We started out with just a small group of cities who came to us and said, you know, is there something fun we can do for our communities and rally people to become not just more interested in water resources, but to really start to invest the time and understand the role that water plays in the sustainability of our cities. And so we put together a community-based challenge, and we had some fun prizes, and we rewarded people for doing the right thing in addition to setting up their communities for to be more resilient, as we're facing drought issues and water quality issues around the country. But we're going into our eighth year of this program, and this year we just concluded it. We had residents across the U.S. made over 740,000 pledges to cut their water waste by 3 billion gallons. And the reason why we came to Cleveland is because whenever the foundation kicks off this campaign every year, we always try to find a region or a location where water is an important focus. And we really thought that Cleveland's focus on the improvements to the Cuyahoga River over the last 50 years, their efforts for sustainable Cleveland are really in line with what the foundation's trying to do to inspire people about water conservation.
And I guess one other reason, I think it was 25 years ago, Weiland painted a big mural downtown.
Yeah, in 1997, Weiland, the artist who's the founder of the Weiland Foundation, embarked on a tour across the United States. And his mission was to show people beautiful images of marine life on the sides of buildings with the idea that no matter wherever we live and whatever we do, we all have an impact on the ocean. In other words, we all live downstream from somebody else. So he wanted people to start thinking about their actions upstream and the impacts that would have downstream. And he thought, wow, there's no better way to show this than, show people, these incredible, beautiful whales, life size, on the biggest canvases in the world. And in that case, it's the size of buildings and sports arenas, skyscrapers. And in 1997, on one of these tours, he came to the city of Cleveland and worked with Cleveland Public Power and created this incredibly beautiful 32,000 square foot mural on the Cleveland Public Power building. It's called Song of the Whales. It is one of the biggest marine life murals in the world, and we have been talking to the city about restoring that as part of the Cuyahoga 50 commemorations this year. So we're actively working with Cleveland Water, the city, PPG Paints, and basically everybody else who wants to rally and support the restoration of this mural in the city.
Excellent. Well, I'm going to bring in our co-host of the show, Mr. Chris Davies, and he's going to start off with the Mayor Jackson. So, Chris.
Hey, thank you, Rob, and good to see you this week, by the way.
Thank you.
So let's get, thanks first of all, Steve, for that summary. It was it was great, and our listeners really appreciate it. I know that you've been on the show before, but our appreciation goes out to you for summarizing once again what the National Mayor's Campaign was about and Weiland's position in that. So right now we'd like to get into some questions for Mayor Jackson and his staff there. And I think we're going to talk mostly about a program that they have there called Sustainable Cleveland. And I understand, Mayor Jackson, this question is for you to kick this off. 2019, a fairly big year for the city of Cleveland, especially as it relates to the Sustainable Cleveland Initiative. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
The initiative was something I started 10 years ago in 2009. I went to Case Western Reserve University, was putting on some conference, and I was able to go there a couple of times for a couple of hours. And what I took away from the conference was that we, as in our systems, operate in a way that is very exploitive, in a way that we exploit people, resources, and situations. And many times we did that for the sake of profits or for some financial reason. And so I went to the organizers of that event, and I asked them if they could help me organize something to look at how do we transform our economy to a sustainable economy within a decade, by 2019. And that meant that how do we look at having an economy that use sustainable practices, an economy that recognize that being sustainable is not contrary or the enemy of business or profits, but really can be very profitable. Example, if you have zero waste, that could be profitable. If you reduce your energy bill by using certain technology, that could be very profitable. All these kind of, and at the same time, how do we respect the environment and do it in a way that makes that a quality of life issue? Because at the end of the day, we're at the end of the food chain, and whatever happens out there in the environment and how our systems operate and impacts that environment has a significant impact on the physical, psychological, and emotional health of people. And so I'm articulating this 10 years later, really not knowing that when I first started it, that it would mature in this fashion, but that was the general purpose of it.
I think then probably to say that over the last 10 years or so, there's been quite a lot of different themes, I think, that as I understand the initiative that have happened over the years, quite an accomplishment over 10 years, Mayor Jackson, to say the least. What are some of those themes that have been prevalent throughout the 10-year history?
Well, I'll let Matt Gray, my chief of sustainability, answer that. But to kind of help put it in context, as we were looking at doing this, we ultimately decided at the end of the first summit to do it every year for 10 years. That wasn't the original plan. So in doing that, one of the things that we wanted to do as we kept people's interest and kept it focused is to establish a theme for each year. And that's how that came about. Matt, if you could.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, some of those themes I think are common to a lot of cities, but have a special resonance here in Cleveland. The first year, I think 2011, we talked about energy efficiency. And we focused on that because in many ways that is the low-hanging fruit of sustainability, as the mayor talked about. I mean, you know, any organization, any home, often that's one of the first things they'll go to because they can also save money. We did a lot on local food. Cleveland's a national leader in creating a local food economy, and also an area early on I think the average resident could engage on, and they've continued to engage on that topic. Renewable energy was another big theme. We're doing a lot on solar. We're also in the process of creating the first offshore wind turbines in North America in fresh water. We've been working for about a decade on that and made a lot of progress and hope to have those in the water within a couple years. Mayor talked about waste was a theme. Transportation has been a big one just in the last 4 years. We've added about 80 miles of bike infrastructure. Again, really focused on safety for all modes of transportation in city streets. Vibrant green space has been a big one. We have a goal now of having every resident living within a 10-minute walk of a park, a good and clean park. We're above the national average right now, but we want to get to 100% of those residents having access. And then finally, I'll mention that, you know, what it all comes back to, which is vital neighborhoods, having all neighborhoods prosperous, and then people. This year, the last year of this 10-year initiative, it's the year of people. And that's really what the focus in is making sure all this work we're doing on all these topics benefits everyone in the city.
There's a lot of stuff to go through there, Matt. I understand that it's been quite a challenge for you, but we have a couple of other questions for you, Matt. But before we go to that, I want to tag back to the Wylam Foundation connection just a little bit. And wasn't going to quite let Mayor Jackson off the hook so quick. But it seemed like, Mayor Jackson, it seemed like that after you learned the goals of the Wylam Foundation's campaign, right, to bring together, as it were, all the civic leaders for major cities like yourself, right, along with community groups, and the objective was to inspire people to do more for water conservation. I think you were very supportive of that effort. So let me ask you a question. What role do you see yourself and other mayors as having in the effort to promote sustainability in our cities?
Well, first of all, being mayor in Cleveland or being mayor in any metropolitan area, it doesn't mean that you're able to just say something and it happens. I think the Wyland Foundation will be in complete agreement that anything that happens in a positive way in this area will have to be a complete community effort. And that means that there has to be changes in mindsets, change in cultural behaviors, change in operations for whether they're individual families and how they operate their household or institutions like major hospitals or corporations and how they operate. So all these things have to be done in a very comprehensive way. Now, being mayor does help in terms of having the ability to influence and call together groups of people or to state something and have the bully pulpit for stating a particular policy. And what you find and what I found is that when you're clear about what direction you want to go into, and you're honest about it, people are pretty clear as whether or not they support it or not. Some people may support it in ideal, but in practicality and in their operations, they're doing the complete opposite. So it really serves to call out individuals and institutions, corporations, call them out as to whether or not their policies and their conversation around sustainability and their practices really come together. And in most cases, they don't, and that includes the city. We still have some very unsustainable practices at the city. Why? Because it is so ingrained in decades of the way in which things have been done. But we make significant, sure. We made significant progress. So the foundation and them really stating what it is around conservation, clean water, and all this other stuff really helps to bring a much broader constituency together besides just a city and a mayor. But in order for it to be effective, each city has to make progress in that area. And you cannot do it without complete buy-in. And the more buy-in you get, the more progress you make. And I think we've got significant buy-in from people who originally were skeptical. We've always had the buy-in of those who were the advocates. And then people are seeing that, you know, this can actually be to my benefit on my bottom line. So I'm not an enemy of sustainability anymore. I think it's is a good proposition for us.
Well, I wouldn't sell you short because you have been mayor for as long as you have in the city without being recognized as an influential person and something, and someone who has good leadership qualities and such. So congratulations to you and your team for that. Matt, we understand that this year is a big in the history, and if I'm pronouncing this river, because I've heard four different people tell me how to pronounce it. I'm not sure I'm doing it right. Is it Cuyahoga, Cuyahoga River? And can you tell us a little bit about the river, its historic fire, and what makes this a special year?
Well, the four of us would probably pronounce it differently, too. I think Cuyahoga. but it is a special year. So the Cuyahoga River, it's been the lifeblood of this region for the last 13,000 years, right? First with Native Americans. Then through when, you know, Moses Cleveland came here and to the shores, he settled at the mouth of the river. All the way through industry through the 1800s and 1900s, it was the source of that industry and where industry located. So it's always been a critical piece for Cleveland. Starting in 1868 was the first fire on the river, and there was periodic burns on the river for 101 years, all the way to June 22nd, 1969. And many rivers burned across the country, but this fire became special. got in Time Magazine and kind of came at the end of a decade of environmental activism. And this specific fire on that June 22nd really helped lead to the creation of the US EPA the next year and then the Clean Water Act in 1972. So, you know, we're celebrating this year 50 years of progress on the river. You know, back then it was literally dead. I mean, there was no oxygen in the river. Nothing lived. And now today we have 70 species of fish who are thriving. It's shared by industry, it's with recreation. It's a driver of our clean water economy. So we're celebrating that with some there's tons of events this year. But we're also looking towards the future. There are some issues today which we didn't have to deal with in 69. You know, in 69 the issue was largely industrial pollution from some bad actors dumping whatever they could in the river. Today the issue is really more us. It's everyone. It's that what we call non-point source pollution. So it's the plastics. It's the runoff from agriculture. It's climate change. So we're kind of using this year to also, you know, shine a light on and make a little progress in these current problems and challenges with water.
That's a good story. So I got a question for Mayor Jackson again. Where were you, Mayor Jackson, when the river last burned? Do you remember it, and how has it changed up until today?
I think I just got out the Army, and so I remember hearing about it, but didn't pay much attention to it. You know, I was just got back from Vietnam. I think I got out the Army in May of 69, so this happened in June. So I was a newcomer home, and so it didn't make, I heard about it, but it didn't make that much difference to me back then. But as Matt was saying, the river burning was not an unusual event. You know, having water catch fire was not an unusual event, not only in Cleveland, but throughout the country. But it was part of the way in which our system operated. And our system operated to the detriment of clean water and those wild life that existed in clean water and who depended on clean water. So it was the impact of the way in which we operated economically, politically, socially, all these kind of things that resulted in the environmental impact that it had. Now, since then, places like Cleveland and other Rust Belt cities are not as heavily industrialized. So that has played a major part in helping the lake and the city, I mean the river, really restore itself over a period of time. And then with certain environmental protection around emission and things like that, we've gotten to the point we are now, where it's really a draw for recreational activity. It's a draw for development activity, and it's a draw for people who just want to be around water. They just love to be around water. And as a result of that, we're now looking at the infrastructure we have, the development that we have, because back then the highways went along the waterfront, industry was along the waterfront, so there wasn't a lot of residential things happening or development that was designed around people enjoying the recreational or living next to water. So now it's changing. That aspect is changing and allowing access as we develop our waterfront to have it ensured that that there's no cutting off of that waterfront to the general public. I think there are some cities that have allowed for private development to occur where the private development owned the waterfront. Well, we won't allow that in Cleveland. If there's development, there has to be public access. So water has become a very precious and desirable commodity, not in just in terms of people just loving being around it and playing in it, but it's becoming a rare commodity in the world, and its value is increasing. And those who are on or have access or have the ability to use clean water or to help support its population, its economy, and stuff like that. Clean water is a very valuable asset these days and a very desirable asset, and we have to be very careful about those who would want to monopolize clean water for economic purposes.
You know, I've got to say, that story alone, over those years, there's just been some significant strides that have been made. And I'm sure, Mary, you'd be the first one to say that over those years, it's not a one-man job, right? There's been lots of people help. So how do you feel your administration has been able to help turn things around? And what are the major factors that contributed to the restoration of the river?
We have done our part. We're not really understanding the entire picture as the way I understand it now, but I just knew something needed to be done. And so creating Sustainable Cleveland 2019 and trying to transform our economy, the way it functions, the way it operates, and how it benefits people and all that, and not be so exploitive. That's one thing that I believe as Clevelanders have accepted as the proper way to go, even though we're not there completely, but we're inching along in that regard. Having other things happening, like creating the Office of Sustainability and making them a direct report to the mayor, not the mayor's office, but in the mayor's Office of Sustainability, and having a chief in charge of that with a direct report to the mayor, I think gives notice to people that we take it seriously. And then to give that chief the authority to interact with advocates or interact with business or interact with other people from around the country or even world, if he that are of like mind, and seeing what's the best practice, all those kinds of things, we just have to put it in motion. So what the best thing I did was to get out the way in many respects, because if you think you know something, you mess it up if you really don't know it, right? So I was able to get something started, set a direction, a trajectory, and then put the right people in place to help do the everyday nuts and bolts things you have to do to get us to be successful. Again, we're not there. We're on our way. We're moving. But we're far better than we were 10 years ago.
Right. And if I can add quickly, I think we haven't talked about yet is where does the river flow into, which is Lake Erie.
Right.
We certainly have many partners on both. But I think, Jason can speak more, too. I think also the investments we've made in the last decade on water infrastructure to ensure that, the river, the water we take out of that lake, is as clean as possible, and that the infrastructure is resilient.
Right, and the infrastructure that we have in terms of our water plants, our what's under the ground, we deliver a high-quality product, and, for as reasonable price as you can deliver it, imagining the hundreds of millions and billions of dollars of investment that have occurred and the debt on those investments over the last 20, 30, 35 years, we have a pretty good product for that. Jason, if you want to...
Yeah, absolutely, Mayor. I think that it's always an interesting discussion when we start talking about the river, because people do forget sometimes that it does flow into the lake, and the health of the river and the health of the lake are inextricably linked to one another. And we are blessed in Northeast Ohio, and Cleveland in particular, that we sit on the shores of Lake Erie from a drinking water standpoint, because we have this abundant, very stable, very healthy, very consistent source of drinking water that does allow us to produce an unbelievably high-quality product that's safe and distribute it to the 1.5 million people we serve. And that is really driven by the health of the lake. And as the mayor said, some significant investments that we've made over the past 30 years. We've spent about $1.6, $1.7 billion over the last 30 years to make those investments so that the people who need the water that we deliver can count on it being safe when it gets there. And that's designed to account for any number of risks. So lake-based effects of algae and hypoxia, land-based effects from potential contaminants in the ground and in lead plumbing. So we're really well prepared and well positioned, and we wouldn't be as successful as we are without a healthy and strong Lake Erie. And that's dependent upon having a healthy and strong river, which I think can't be understated how important that's been to the development and the implementation of the water system over the last 30 to 50 years.
Great. Well, these are for next questions for Matt and Jason. Continue. What are some of the specific activities that will be hosted in this anniversary year and weekend commemorating the fire?
Well, we so we've been celebrating all year. So we have a Cuyahoga50.org.
Cleveland is our party animals, huh?
Oh, yeah. We can't get enough of our water events. So we've had over 100 events this year to mark the 50th. And I think this is, we basically created this platform for engagement. And what's been amazing is all these institutions, all these organizations, from small neighborhood-based organizations to our big ones, our big arts organizations, are having these water-based events. So maybe I'll ask Jason first to talk about a couple examples from Cleveland Water, and I can go to the big anniversary weekend.
Yeah, you know, I think we've really done a good job as a community of convening folks to come together and talk about the importance of water. And as we've had this discussion, more and more folks, I think, are starting to understand the bigger picture, which is always really good. For example, about 2 weeks ago, we hosted our annual Drinking Water Week open house, where we open up one of our water plants. We have four interconnected water treatment plants. We open one up and invite the public to come in, and we had our largest attendance ever at that event. We had over 2,000 people come through the doors to understand what it takes to make a reliable supply of safe drinking water and everything that goes on behind the scenes. As we've been out having community discussions about other issues, the importance and the value of water has become a more important and more kind of consistent topic in those discussions. And I think it's really leading us into the big weekend, which is the weekend of the 22nd of the actual anniversary. I think we have 25 events in that week leading up to that weekend that really provide an opportunity for folks to interact with any number of policy, fun, recreational activities, a lot of really exciting stuff. So, Matt, do you want to talk about those?
Yeah. So the mayor often talks about institutionalizing sustainability, which, in other words, is making it business as usual. How do you have organizations sort of have sustainability ingrained in their DNA? So we've tried to do with this 50th is to broaden our network of organizations engaged in sustainability. And what's so great is that water and fire happen to be topics that almost anyone can engage with. And given the history in Cleveland, it's sort of an easy ask. So we've had over 200 organizations partner with events just on the 5 days, so June 19th through the 23rd, over that 50th anniversary. You know, our City Club of Cleveland, one of the oldest, locations of free speech in the country. They're organizing an event with Christine Todd Whitman, a previous EPA administrator, as well as a couple local leaders, really talking about the past, present, and future of environmental policy. We have 10 international speakers coming for a free event, all connected to water. We have runs for water. We have four events on the water itself. There's a stand-up paddleboarding race. There's a regatta. We're going to actually have a float on the river where pretty much anyone can get on the river and be part of a historic photo 50 years later. And there's actually going to be a lighted boat parade, too, so both celebrating industry but also pleasure boats on the river that night. The Rock Hall is having a great concert. Our Science Center is going to be free to the public. We've also made our public transit system free that entire day on the actual 50th, again, from an equity perspective, for access to these events, and for parking, to avoid some parking issues. So we've really, I think, gone out of our way to connect as many people as we can to the 50th, and again, kind of broaden that network of people who are engaged on this topic, and to use the 50th as an opportunity to do so.
Well, after hearing that, Chris and I have only one good thing to say.
Cleveland rocks!
Thank you for that.
You're welcome. Yeah, I want to bring Steve back into the conversation. Steve, are you still there?
I sure am.
Okay, good. I know I was with you when you guys rolled into town with Weiland, and can maybe just tell a little bit about the event, what happened and where it was, and you know, what went on that day?
Yeah, we were really honored to be hosted by Davis Maritime and Aerospace High School in Cleveland, which is a charter school, and it's a vocational school that, for us, it meant a lot to us because it really is the young people that are going to be assuming the mantle of responsibility for our clean water and our healthy oceans and our environment. So to be there with Mayor Jackson and Matt and Jason and you know, all the support from the city of Cleveland and the utilities, it just meant the world to us. And it was really a show of force for the young people to know that we've got their back and that we're fully supportive of investing in them and their efforts to become great stewards of our environment and the great resources that are in Cleveland and around the United States and, of course, the world. So we were there, and, of course, you were there, Rob, and we kicked off our annual national campaign for clean water, and couldn't have asked for a better situation. Weiland, of course, is always inspirational when he talks to young people. He's spoken to well over a million kids in the last decade and sharing his vision for the future. So it was really fantastic, I'm glad that the mayor's here and the team's there, because on behalf of the Weiland Foundation, we just wanted to say thanks to everything that you're doing, Mayor Jackson, and your team. You know, your hearts are all in the right place, and we're firmly supportive of what you all do.
I also hope, Steve, that I didn't blow out the TV cameras when I gave all the kids the whistles to blow. So it kind of shocks a couple of people on that.
Okay, hey, just from the dialogue, I'd like to ask Jason a question, if you will, right? Kind of circle back to all of the sustainability efforts, all the programs, all the water quality improvements, all that stuff that's gone on. So, Jason, maybe you can tell our listeners just a little bit about what's the status of water in Cleveland today, right now.
Right now, we are producing a reliable supply of safe drinking water. And we're a very large system, so it's a big job. We've got a lot of things working and moving pieces and parts, but everything is working well. The water is safe and flowing out to about 1.5 million people across Northeast Ohio. We serve all of Cleveland and about 79 other communities as well.
Oh, that's good. So last wrap-up question here is for the mayor. So Mayor Jackson, what do you want people around the country to know about how far Cleveland has come environmentally?
I don't know how to answer that, and I'll tell you why. It's because I would just let people come here and see themselves, and then they can better answer that question than I think I can, because I'm here and I'm involved in it, and I really don't have anything to compare it to. Matt Gray has a broader understanding of the other cities and what they're doing and not doing, what we look to them for as best practice, what they look to us for best practice. So I would just say that you just have to do it. The conversation is a nice conversation. Having a philosophical discussion around the environment and around our systems and how it affects the environment, having a conversation around the health of people and the disparity and equity in terms of health and all those other things that associated with what I believe to be a sustainable social network. Those are great conversations, but I remember when I was a younger man and they were having the same conversation, and so I've learned a long time ago that the conversation is nice and is a good academic exercise, but it's what you do that matters. And we believe that we have put in place an infrastructure that has helped move the city forward in this direction. And are we where we'd like to be? No. Or where we should be? No. But we are so much further than where we were. And that once we institutionalize it and just make it what Cleveland does, you don't think apart. You don't think about it. It's just what we do in terms of social and economic and political behavior. Then it is, I believe that's our success as we pass this thing on to whoever comes next. Would you agree with that, Matt?
Yeah, that makes complete sense.
He would not disagree with the mayor.
Well, I think you answered the question just fine, Mayor Jackson. So maybe another way to look at it is say, hey, just peeking into the future a little bit, right? You yourself said a little earlier that you quite haven't got there yet. And as you and many other people that have been on the Water Zone radio show have said that all of these efforts are not, it's not a just destination. It's about the journey, right? So maybe you or Matt or Jason can answer this question. What do you have planned for the coming years for Cleveland?
Well, we plan on just plan on just doing whatever it is that needs to be done. As I said before, a lot of which I do not know. I either learn it, become more mature in the subject matter, or I have people who work for me who are more adapt and who are better suited to give advice in that direction, and one of those people is Matt. And so, Matt, what would you say?
Yeah, I mean, building off the previous discussion, I mean, if any city comes and says they're a sustainable city, they're lying to you. I mean, the reality is to become a sustainable city is requiring a complete transformation of our economy over, 10, 15 years and culture, and no city is there yet. So I'll just put that out there. I think in terms of us and key next steps kind of getting to that point, we're going to be working over this next year on a plan to transition to basically 100% renewable electricity. We're at about 10% right now. And what we're really aiming to do is how do you make that transition? And at the same time, ensuring that those most in need get the job during that transition, and that things like energy burden are made better. People actually reduce their bills, and especially in a city like Cleveland, which has a high low-income population. So I think what we really want to do, which maybe has never been done, is in a big transition in the economy to actually transfer wealth to the people who need it the most.
And I would say is not necessarily using the word transfer wealth, but is allowing for the ability to access the process to wealth.
Right.
And to make sure that as we function as a city, economically, socially, and politically, that we measure our success and our greatness by whether or not the least of us are better off as a result of our activity. And that's not in terms of welfare and charity, but in terms of how do we incorporate everyone into this new direction, this future economy, this future social engagement that we have to be involved in if we're going to actually survive, I guess, as a species in some respect. So it is about setting that trajectory. So you just do this one little thing, and there's another little thing, and then another little thing, and they tend to build up. One of those areas is our water system, delivery of high-quality water, and make sure that we don't have the same problems other cities have had, particularly when we get on the western end of Lake Erie with the algae and that results in poor water quality as a source, and which means it's more expensive and more difficult to produce drinkable quality water for the customers. The same thing that may have happened where we intake water that is heavily polluted in one particular thing or another. It takes a lot of effort to get that out. And the more chemicals you put in, the less it is water, right? is more something else than it is water. And so having a water system that really creating a source that is good to being pure and drinkable at the source, knowing that you have to clean it up, having a water system able to do that. So it's all interconnected. But it's all about how do you provide equity and how do you get rid of disparity and how do we create a healthier environment for people to live, work, and do business. That's what it's about. Now, how do we get there? You know, we don't always know, but we're moving.
Extremely well said. And I'll tell you, for us, Chris and I, and I'm speaking for Chris, I'm sure he agrees, he's shaking his head yes, and all our listeners, we really appreciate the time you guys took to spend with us. Mayor Jackson, you are a remarkable person. Matt Gray, Jason Wood, Steve Creech, I mean, all you guys are something I kind of want to aspire to be. I'm probably older than all of you, but when I grow up, I want to be like all of you guys. So we can do that.
Much appreciated.
So again, I want to thank each and every one of you for participating in this conversation, and wish you guys lots of luck and success in the future. And again, thanks for being a guest on our great show, The Water Zone. So thank you very much, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Thank you, Rob.
All right, everybody. Well, welcome back to The Water Zone. A great interview there, truly, with Mayor Jackson and Steve Creech from the Wyland Foundation. Really a true success story and proof that sincere efforts that are made to clean up a water source can pay real dividends, as illustrated in that conversation. So guess what, guys? Our surprise guest host called back in from up there in Santa Fe, New Mexico. I hope the elevation and the altitude aren't getting to your head. Rob, welcome back. How are you?
Thanks. That was a great conversation. It was enjoyable listening to it again. Truly see a bunch of people who have a good passion and a commitment to get things done.
Yeah, indeed so, right? Those guys are, tell a compelling story, you know, especially from the years back when all of us, when I was younger, at least some of our listeners may not even be old enough to remember these news broadcasts and seeing the pictures of the Cuyahoga River actually in flames, right, and burning, right? But I remember that as a kid, and just to hear this inspiring story, just terrific. Hey, Rob, so... what you up to up there still? Have you been out to dinner yet? Had anything to eat?
No. I'm gonna go out after the show, after we do this, and gonna meet have dinner with a couple people. One of the people I'm gonna be meeting is Dr. Hossein Hilary, and he's at the University of New Mexico. We talked today about irrigation water budgets. And what's interesting is, as you and I and some of our listeners know, that the water budgets are an instrumental tool for water conservation. Thus, the creation and use is rapidly increasing. And what he's preparing and done some software and his team at the college is they've come up with software where they'll fly a drone over a property and actually do measurements and everything else and determine what the water budget for outdoor landscaping will be. And I thought it was pretty interesting. And then Doug Pouchard, who's the president of Cool Water, was saying that he believes in the next 10 years, it'll be able to go down and tell what kind of